This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 272, Serenity Meow. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on a wonderful Friday with my two favorite co-hosts and podcasters, Michael Martin and Andy Piper. Gentlemen, how the heck are you?
Thanks, Michael. Great to be back with you both. Coming to you from a very sunny London, England this weekend. We have a long holiday weekend here. So I've been enjoying a little bit of backyard camping. And trying to keep abreast, as usual, of all the tech news and everything exciting on the internet, which is what we do on this show, mostly. How are
mostly.
You, Michael? Mostly.
Mostly. I'm doing well as well. I was kind of jealous of the tent there that you have set up. Have you actually spent the night already, Andy, or is that going to be today?
Indeed. Last night, yeah, no, it was fun fitting it into our bijou yard, but we slept here last night. I think we're going to maybe have another couple of nights of warm enough weather, and then I think I saw that the weather may be taking a change on Sunday, so we might retire to our nice warm beds at that point.
You must not have what they call mosquitoes, or you have good netting.
something bit me overnight already on my ankle, so that was less than welcome, but it's fine. It's all good.
Excellent. Well, we've got a really, really exciting show for everybody this week. I know there's been some really interesting posts and other things to talk about, beginning with, I think, the never-ending continuation of our COVID special, What to Do with Meetings When You Can't Go in Person. So, Michael, what was this first one that you found from TechCrunch?
Well, it wasn't me.
Was it me?
Because I don't normally look at TechCrunch, but this particular article was an interesting one because it's focused on some of the things that we've been talking about here, which is looking at platforms that are games as a companion to the meeting environments like the Zooms and the others of the world here, too. So this one is reinforcing what we've been talking about here, and apparently a lot of other people have been too, about Animal Crossing and other spaces and places where you can stay in touch with people and keep socially distant while remaining close in touch.
You know, it's interesting, at least the title of the article, and I guess the premise is that you got to have a good social platform first, and then that would be helpful. And I keep thinking, you know, maybe we ought to have a good social platform when you're actually working, to where you actually enjoy the social aspect of it first before the work aspect. What do you think?
I tend to like this. And, you know, one of the things that that I enjoy the most about the social platforms and the gaming platforms, and this kind of, I think, clicks in, Andy, nicely to what you'd said a week or two ago about how you're out there with what you do with Board Game Geek and what you do in a variety of other places, and that allows and provides for what I've been calling the loose, tight connection. I can be aware that you're around and you're doing something, and that provides an opportunity for me, even if I'm just lurking, to know that you're out there doing things. And we're not checking in quite as often on Swarm as we have once upon a time, but those kind of mechanisms, Michael, are ones that I think allow for the relationships that exist between people and for those relationships to continue, even though there might not be direct communication. You can see the alerts, you can engage if you want to, and you have a subject that makes for an easy conversation to open the door.
This takes me all the way back to 2007, so 13 years ago. My friend lapsed connection because we've not seen each other but through events and things for such a very long time. But Lisa Reichelt, I'll drop a note in the show notes, wrote a very influential blog post called Ambient Intimacy. And she kicked off with talking about platforms such as Flickr, Twitter, upcoming, and just the ability to kind of mentally keep tabs on or be aware of what other folks are working on and doing and having fun and just, you know, being able to comment on those things. So I think exactly what you just said, Michael. I think this is what I can't remember what you just described it as, but I just connected that your phrase with Lisa's ambient intimacy immediately, and just thought this is the same thing 13 years later. But and when I say that, I don't mean it is identical, because we have enhancements.
That's an awesome description. Mine was a little more chemistry related, I suppose. Right, when I'm thinking about the loose tight bonds, molecular bonds that exist,
yes.
Right,
yes,
and
yes,
sometimes
yes,
those
yes.
actually become the strongest chemical bonds. Versus the ones that are more brittle because they're hard, right?
Exactly.
So ambient intimacy is. I'm really excited, Andy, to read that article, because I'm sure it expresses kind of what I'm noodling about in another interesting way. That's really, really neat.
Well, I'm glad to send you Back to the Future. It's a good article. I've always remember quoting that, especially back in the day when the three of us and many of our colleagues in the space were really starting to explore and push the boundaries and understand the power of some of these technologies. So yeah,
super. And again, the mind is exploding, but you know, how many of the things that we do here are Back to the Future, right? You know, didn't we talk about that, you know, eons ago? Well, yes, we did.
But every time that happens, sorry to interrupt you, but every time that happens. And I just had a conversation about this today about, you know, remote working. We've been talking about this and doing it to a great extent for a long time. But every time it happens, it becomes more acceptable, and the technology has upgraded a little bit more. Things become a bit smoother. So, you know, we may be going in what seem to be either spirals or loops or cycles of some form. But actually, you know, things get better and easier each time in each of these spaces.
And I keep always thinking through that, because Andy, I think you're absolutely right that it is kind of an upward spiral, right? Mm-hmm. Not a downward spiral, but it's an upward spiral. And I keep thinking of all the little things that we are identifying now in totally different areas or totally different subjects, whether it's, you know, AR contact lenses or, you know, things with robotics or AI or whatever, that 10 years from now we'll be talking about, and they'll have that additional set of spirals that have happened where they have become near commonplace or normal behavior and normal activities, and what level of advancement in technology or capabilities will have existed in that time period to make them so much more powerful than they are today. It's always exciting to me from that perspective, because these topics keep coming back, but every time they're slightly different or slightly better or slightly more interesting or slightly more accepted.
And while I know that we want to get through lots of different things, I will just also throw in that as a result of last week's show, when we were talking about Ian Epred's new avatar in Second Life, I myself signed back into Second Life for the first time in quite a few years, probably, I would say at least 5, to be honest.
Yeah.
And got chatting to somebody and almost immediately got told or pointed out that I looked a bit kind of like my avatar looked a bit kind of
old school.
Old school.
So original gangster.
So then I needed to go off and find a place that took some linen dollars to buy myself a mesh my avatar to upgrade. And I immediately felt, quite embarrassed. But either way,
I've got to figure out what the going rate for a good mesh is, right? What the going rate for a good mesh is, because I still have some linden dollars in the system.
I think I probably spent far too many real dollars on trying to upgrade myself and then struggled, because now that it's a mesh, you have so many moving parts and extra bits. So I could probably have done a better job of smartening my avatar up. Anyway, it was fun, and thank you, Ian, for your tweet that encouraged me finally to get back and see what I was missing.
You know, so this is hilarious on lots of levels, not the least of which, when we were all very much in Second Life, talking about digital goods, and you know that was going to drive a series of economic decisions. What I hear from you, Andy, is that the key driver here was social pressure, right? This is fashion applied to a virtual world in the way that you're represented there, right?
It's fast fashion.
To some extent, yeah. I still have, I've leant over and gone to my bookshelf, and this is one of those great visual things that don't work at all on an audio podcast, but I've literally picked out a book by my friend Angela Thomas over in Australia called Youth Online, which was very much also Identity and Literacy in the Digital Age. When was this published? 2008, 9? This one says 2007, actually. And then we have Convergence Culture, where an old and new media collide. With a old school
with an iPod on the front.
I think first or second gen iPod, 2006. We've had those thoughts and conversations for sure.
Awesome.
Yeah, super cool. We've got lots to cover,
and
some things that may wind up will be kicking in out of order here, but that is the nature of these conversations, right? This is the intriguing element of what we're aiming for. The next article that kind of files under, I think, Michael, you kind of nailed it here, saying, hey, well, no duh. There's a Wired article that did catch my eye from, I think it was last weekend, that suggested, hey, you should try exploring a virtual world if Zoom is not cutting it for you. So the neat thing about it was it's pointing out elements like World of Warcraft. Gosh, where have you heard that before? Or this online town item that we've talked about before that I feel like I need to just go and jump in there. I'm still trying to find that older environment, Michael, that you and I talked about that, you know, is a representation of an office. And
yeah, I still can't find I have the account somewhere.
Couldn't find it.
And it's funny because I saw another article today, and I can't remember if I popped it into the feed or if we're going to talk about it, of people in Silicon Valley who miss being at work together. And there's another online environment that's simulating the downtown area of San Francisco and where all the people would be had they been at work, and a couple other things. I was just like, yep.
Yeah, no, that one you're referring to is called Stay at Home Valley.
Yes.
I remember seeing that too.
I even set up my account.
And did you? All right, well, this ought to be fun because it looks very much like the opening credits for Silicon Valley, the TV show.
Yep.
And you can set up, okay, your digital overlay on top of the city where things are. And apparently there's a whole host of Easter eggs and secret insider jokes that you'll get if you are familiar. I bet you there's got to be something about blue bottle coffee in there somewhere or another. That's super cool. I can't wait to jump in there and get a chance to look at that.
Yep.
So Stay at Home Valley. Funny. All right. Well, the next thing are two pieces, Michael. I think you found both of these about the feline capabilities of helping you with your game design. And being a designer and a developer yourself, Michael, as well as a cat owner, I'm really eager to hear your take on
this. Yeah, unfortunately, former cat owner. We haven't had cats in a couple of years, and I miss them tremendously. But it's funny. The actual article that I saw was this Los Angeles Times article that popped up in my feed on Apple News and was behind the firewall, behind the paywall. So I did a quick Google search and found the actual article from Los Angeles Times, and I can click on it and get the whole article, which was a little workaround there. And then I looked at it and I said, gosh, this sounds like someone just restating something else. And then I found the actual GDC presentation where William Devlinthal gave a talk on what cats can teach us about our game design. I haven't been able to watch his entire video yet because it showed up today for me. And I've been, you know, what's that called? Working. But the basic idea has to do, the way I read the news article was around, you know, understanding the audience, engaging them appropriately, and then providing them value over time. That's a gross simplification. But it was talking about a game that the guy designed for cats, thinking that it would be great to design a game for cats. And when he first started testing it, his cat would attack the iPad or the tablet, whatever it was, but like attack a foot to the left of it. Right. And the idea is there's things moving on the screen and you want your cat to attack the things on the screen. And the whole idea being, you know, to give them that playtime, the experience that they have when they're hunting. And like in real life, I guess that's probably not the right statement, but I'll say it anyway. If you are not a gamer when you're young, the likelihood that you will become a gamer when you're older is less and less. And the same thing happens with cats. Kittens, right, are very, very playful. And cats at the ages of like 1 to 2, 2 to 4, tend to be in their prime hunting age. And so kittens would only engage if you engage them because they want constant stimulation, right? Just like little kids, they want constant interaction. The hunter cat would actually hunt for a while and then get bored. But the older cats who did not engage in game-like behavior before that just didn't care less. And I think about that in the design of games. You know, what type of games interest me? What type of games do I find engaging? And are they targeting me, or am I trying a game that really has nothing to do with something that should be appropriate for me? I just thought it was a really interesting article and view on understanding game design. I wanted to see if you guys had a chance to read it since I posted it kind of late, and what your thoughts might be.
Well, as a former cat owner, because I'm sort of in the same boat you are, Michael, I miss our cats tremendously too. I was intrigued by the whole idea of the analytics around this and being able to see what the cats actually do. Where do they target? Why do they target? And then being able to potentially make some use of that as well, because I know most cats don't have an enormous disposable income to pay for the games that, you know, developers like this might make.
Yeah, the disposable income of cats is probably pretty low.
Yeah, they're struggling in that regard just a little bit, I'm sure. But the flip side of this too was the notion of how complex cat artificial intelligence might be in order to go after these mechanisms. It was intriguing for me, and I think haven't we seen something like this before? You know, some other, you know, game structures that are like this on like a phone or a tablet, with the intention of this, you know, young kid kind of things too, right?
Yeah. I do remember seeing other games like this.
There's been a remarkable amount of feline-related content on the internet in the last week, more so than usual, I think. The Here Kitty game as well, I think that's... We'll probably just throw that in the show notes rather than spend a ton of time talking about it today, but it's... yeah, evidently the stay-at-home movement is really increasing our bonds with our feline friends.
Well, and the reason why I think that one is intriguing, Here Kitty, is that it allows kids to go and play hide and seek with augmented reality.
Yeah.
So you've got to kind of wander around your house and go find it. So AR is certainly, you know, everywhere. And yet again, we've got another example of the, yes, we've seen this before, article from TechCrunch describing, hey, the way to solve for the problem is use AR to help with the retail sales that are disappearing. Like, you know, put that new computer on your desk, or imagine what that car might look like in your driveway, or the clothing example here springs up my virtual model, you know, once more, yep. Right? So intriguing stuff there. Neat. Now, as long as we're on older apps and looking at apps from a while ago, I have to say I've never been a user of Whisk, much less Whisk 2.0, which was just released. Yes. Have you?
I thought about it. I saw this article, and I think I did at least launch and play with the first version of Wisk when it came out, like, what was it, 16 years ago? I used to do maintain some websites, and I did it all via hand-coded HTML and CSS in my favorite text editor. And this was one of those early tools, or early, whatever. one of these tools that was designed to make that easier for you by giving you a UI that's GUI. Ooh, blah, blah, that's a new word, GUI. To make life easier. And what I really found funny about it was this article from the author of the software saying, you know, I haven't touched it in forever, and I decided I was going to completely rewrite it. And I was actually dealing with some code recently that I hadn't touched in years. And knowing how much work that is, I just had to take my hat off to the guy for completely – I mean, it's a rewrite at this point. You don't fix it. You don't tweak it. You rewrite. It's been 16 years since you've touched the code.
I found it interesting that this is a Mac app. Yep. And he actually very specifically says this is still old school Objective-C using Cocoa. But yes, I've had to do a ton of work to get rid of all the deprecated stuff and bring it up to date. I didn't get as much of a sense that it's a ground up rewrite as it would be if it was, like, for example, porting from Objective-C to Swift and Swift UI and all the other new things. But no, I mean, you're absolutely right, Michael, and especially I find this all the time. I write a lot of sample code just for developers and platforms, and you know, I've been doing my current role for 6 years, and I'm finding I'm going back and having to fix a ton of issues, and, you know, and the Python and Ruby versions have changed and all those things. You know, I mean, it's a good but never-ending treadmill.
Yes.
I don't want things to be stuck in the past, and I know that things upgrade and improve much as we were talking about this in relation to virtual worlds and virtual spaces earlier, but you can't, if you're committed, you can't stand still. And it's really exciting to see this, and I admit that I hadn't seen the Wisk 2 announcement this week, and I've just dropped some cash on the developer because I'm excited and I'm interested, so I
excellent,
I want to give it a go.
Wow. Fantastic. And it's this is really cool, you know, to see where it came from. And, you know, I remember that user interface and, you know, where it is now.
Mm-hmm.
Hats off for doing all that modernization work. And it's a good thing, as he mentions, time traveling back to the simpler 2003 is an enjoyable distraction. So thinking about traveling backwards in time kind of reminds me about traveling forwards in time. So I had the good fortune earlier this week to be in a session with a friend of the show, Jane McGonigal, and to have her talk a little bit about anticipating what the future holds. And she described in her her discussion at Think, which is IBM's annual conference, and that was all being done virtually, a game that she plays with the folks at the Institute for the Future and people that come through that program that I wanted to try out with you guys and just, you know, to explain the high level element of this and see what you think. So the notion about imagining what the future might hold, she started off in her talk by saying, just imagine, you know, like, I don't know, 6 months ago, the idea of saying in 6 months, children will be doing all of their learning from home. We would have looked at them and whoever said that and said, you futurist, you, no way is that going to happen, right? So the way to peer into the future, bring it back to reality now, and then imagine what signals that are being shown that maybe that is a practical future, is to play this game where you write first about whatever topic you want. Her example was shoes, 100 different facts. Right. So one fact after another. So a fact might be most people own multiple pairs of shoes. Most people, or do you write it even, you know, definitively, people take off their shoes every night when they go to bed. Right. So write 100 facts. Are you with me? All right. Then you go through that 100 facts and you flip them on their head. Right. People own exactly one pair of shoes. People don't take their shoes off when they go to bed. then you start going through those 100 and start to say, okay, well, what might make something like that actually true? And what are the things that now you can start to play with to go, okay, can I contemplate a reality where that might exist? And now that I've done that, okay, what does that mean? What could be done about it? How might we prepare for something that at the outset might seem absolutely absurd? So I put in a link here about what is it like to write stories of the future from Jane. And it was just really super to hear that kind of exchange and to imagine, you know, that experience. And after talking with my kids about the concepts of flow and talking about, you know, this particular game and a few of the other things, we'll see if I can convince at least one family member that picking up the Reality is Broken book that I have on my shelf here would be a useful thing to do.
Yes.
What do you guys think of that?
I think they should pick up the book, especially if the shelf is in the way and you need to pick up the shelf so they can walk through. No, just kidding. I like the approach. I think it's a way of brainstorming and understanding potential scenarios better. I unfortunately was not able to attend much of the virtual thing that was going on this week due to other commitments. So I'm hoping I'll have some time, kind of as we discussed last week, this weekend or sometime in the evening or sometime the next few weeks to actually catch up on those sessions that people have highly recommended.
Awesome. Andy, you might do any contemplating about the future?
Anything I contemplate about the future will be wrong by the end of next week. So let's pick that up. Let's pick that up next Friday.
Our projections for the next week.
We were wrong this week.
Hard, isn't it?
I'm excited that you got the opportunity to hear from Dr. McGonagall in that kind of context, because I think you know, those are some of the visionary people that we don't always hear from. So that's very, very cool.
All right. Well, awesome. So we're running close to time here. So we've got a couple of other, you know, fast hitters to share around. So one of them was an article I saw from a website called Apartment Therapy, which I guess is, you know, very relevant these days, where you could go and play a whole range of classic games right now in your browser for free at the Internet Arcade, which is a good thing. I think I've actually been on this before.
I thought we had a few weeks or maybe a couple of months back, I remember some stuff showing up in Internet Arcade. It's interesting to see it coming back. I know it's different than, Andy, the one that you mentioned a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
That was other types of games,
platforms.
I think.
Yeah.
Platform, yeah.
Yeah.
But I love these sites. I love these sites to go find some of those old games and you know, remember what it was like.
Over the course of the week, while we collect links between us and from you, our listeners, when you choose to tweet at us and provide some stuff that you might be interested to hear from us about, I'd also found independently of Michael Martin exactly the same link, and I did think of it in the context of what I discussed a few weeks ago about the old BBC micro library. But
that was it.
Again, it comes to back to that. You know, it comes back to that march of technology. You know, it's it partly comes back to that. I mean, in the context of the capability to run these things in our web browsers today is fantastic and amazing and cool and nostalgic. But also just, you know, the especially as we're all at home and have hopefully some more time to explore some of those things, it's very neat that some of those things are coming back around. I had the same, I think, the same set of thoughts about this one.
Awesome. Super cool. And I'm a big fan of the old Indiana Jones game. I used to play that one pretty frequently, you know, Whip the Thuggy Guard.
I actually have a version of that running on the Mac out of Steam from years ago.
I would always lose on the mine cart thing, as you had to kind of jump the tracks and kind of, you know, move the mine cart around.
Different than jumping the
shark. Would run out.
Yeah, but one of those things that needed, like, you know, immediate responses, and the technology just wasn't there to, you know, the hair trigger response. You still needed to, you know, give it 2 seconds before it registered that you tried to jump over there.
But back then we all had much thicker hair, so the hair trigger was a lot thicker.
Oh, right. Yeah, and also the hair was a lot heavier.
Yes.
You know, it was weighing you down.
A lot of hair weighing me down right now. Andy, one of the articles that that you'd found that was interesting was the one on the weird things coming out of Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
And we did talk about at least one. Is there maybe one more?
Yeah,
let me bring up.
Let me super quickly mention the reason I was excited about this post. It's a gallery of weird things that came out of Silicon Valley in April. And two things of all of these really connected me with me in relation to the show. The first one being it's entitled "My Girlfriend the Chatbot," but idea is it's a semi photo real AI chatbot companion who lives in your browser from a company called Replica. We're not going to have time to talk about it today, but it looks really interesting to me. I think just again that personal representation. We've found it with voice assistants such as Alexa, Google, Siri, etc. Starting to put that physical presence, even though it's virtual, onto it.
Physical virtual presence, yes.
Right. The other one, which I'm amused by, is there's a story in this article that our listeners can go look at about Zoom and some of the AI that Zoom are potentially building. And it reminded me of an old, I say old, it's from, I think, 2010 to 13, I beg your pardon, a webisode series called Moderation Town. And the background to Moderation Town was this entire maritime town, I think during or just after the financial crisis, got laid off from a factory. And so they all got jobs at this internet moderation company back in the days when internet sites were really starting to become a big deal, and they needed to hire staff rapidly to do moderation. And one of the folks from this factory, from this company, who was really high flown scientist, we'd probably today think about them as machine learning AI engineers, was building an AI to block certain types of offensive content from the platform. And unfortunately, in the comedy of the show, instead of blocking the offensive content, it actually starts pasting the offensive content into all of the other images on the site.
Excellent.
So I think I may have found the episode on YouTube, and if I have correctly identified it, then I will add it to the show notes. But I'm finding it a little bit difficult.
Oh, please do.
Because, 10 years ago is so old school.
Hopefully the show is really looking up.
Yeah, I know we're going to have to cut the other one. I will very very quickly mention. We've already mentioned Stay at Home Valley, which is in here, is the Hot Guys of Silicon Valley website, which obviously I'm.
You're on the list.
No, I know it's because I'm not physically in Silicon Valley that I'm not part of that.
That's it.
Site, but yeah. Anyway, moving on.
Excellent.
Love it, love it. Hey, I know that we're gonna have to bust a move, so to speak. We have two other things that are super fast to touch on. Michael, the sonification of the universe.
Yep.
Great data visualization or purification, perhaps.
Audification.
And audification.
I like that.
Yeah. So worth listening to. It is an audio podcast, so you can certainly do that. And then the Lego Neuschwanstein link. Really incredible.
Yeah, I actually found a guy who built it. 4,300 pieces, 8 feet long, and it's amazing.
Wow. Wow. So check out that visual. Thanks, everybody, for listening in. Be aware when you go to the show notes, we'll have some content there that is maybe not as family friendly as this particular audio component of the show, but worth checking out because these are news, and we bring you all the news that crosses our streams. So thanks, everybody, for joining in. Look forward to connecting up with everybody next week, and send us your cards and letters and tweets, and we'll bring them up here next week on Games at Work.
Looking forward to it.
Dot biz. See ya.
See ya.
Bye.
See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.